few tshuvas now that have to do with during the Holocaust and after the Holocaust. The question was like this. After the war, there were many common graves that were made where Jews were either buried not in anywhere with or with Goyim together in Goyish cemeteries. The question was, could you move these bones to Jewish cemeteries, that these Kedoshim should be buried in a Jewish cemetery? The problem was that you couldn't be sure there were only Jews there. So if you move the bones, a lot of Goyim were also killed in these places. So you were now burying Goyim in a Jewish cemetery, which was an affront to the people who buried there before. If you don't move them, it's an affront to the people who are not buried in a Jewish cemetery. If you do move them, it may be an affront to the people already buried in a Jewish cemetery. So basically what the halacha was like this. To move them, for sure you have to move them, because that's a design to be buried, you know, stam somewhere or whatever. Especially if some of them were buried in Goyish cemeteries or whatever. Take those bones out. Now, the fact that there may be non-Jewish bones. Now, if you bury them together with the non-Jewish bones, they're not any worse off than they were to begin with. So you're not doing anything to the bones of the Jews that anyway were buried. But on the other hand, you may be burying non-Jewish bones now in a Jewish cemetery. So what they have to do is make a separate section of the cemetery, either with a fence separating, right, a mechitza, or with, I think, 8 amas separation, right? And then, it's not in the front of the people already buried in the cemetery. It's a cover for these people that are buried right in the Jewish cemetery now. And the fact that there may be Goyim buried amongst them, whatever, there was no worse, nothing you can do about it. Nothing, there was no worse than there was situation they were before they were buried in the Jewish cemetery. So they have that mila. And the fact that there's non-Jews buried in the Jewish cemetery, since it's separated from the rest of the graves, is also okay. That was one thing. Another shayla, a situation where somebody was forced to tear a mezuzah off, or Yidden were forced to tear up Tifli Torah, right? Brought out a Rav who they told him the Nazis, what's it called? This is part of their sadistic, you know, oppression. So what?
Part of them Tanuk.
Right, exactly. So Belodge Cheshvan Tavshin Sivu L'Rav Echad L'Krom Mezuzah V'Imlav Yargu V'Tchila Sirei V'Yachrakat Shiku Makas Achzorios Ad Shenech V'Shadaito Korah Mezuzah V'Nihu. They threatened to kill him if he doesn't tear up the mezuzah, and originally he refused. Then they started beating him, and he went Mamish went Meshuga from the beating, so he tore it up and they let him go. And afterwards he came back to his own strength, realized what he did, and he, what's it called, sat Shiva for the mezuzah, and he ushered himself from giving any psiski halacha. He felt like he was like. So Rav Aronson writes to him that Lamaisa, under the circumstances, first of all, he didn't have to give up his life not to tear a mezuzah. And even, what's it called, if they threatened him to torture him, not to kill him, he probably was allowed to, what's it called, to tear up the mezuzah. So he did it on the onus. He doesn't, all these things he inflicted on himself, these punishments are not proper, and he doesn't have to not pass in shilas now because he feels he's possible or whatever. Okay. Okay, that was one thing. Another thing, shilas about making brachas, they had to eat constantly trade. Chametz on Pesach, I mean, it was very few people were able to maintain some kind of semblance of kashrus during these times. And the only thing they had was soup that was basically treif or whatever. So Shiloh is making a bracha. Okay? The Shulchan Aruch paskens that if you're forced to eat something treif because of pikuach nefesh or whatever, you have to make a bracha on it. Because it's mutter to eat. It's not awesome. The Rambam holds that even if you're forced and it's pikuach nefesh, you don't make a bracha. But that's not called hanos. That's not called a chashiva maichel. Right, that's not called regular eating. But even though we pass like the Shulchan Aruch, he didn't want to make it on a constant basis that people should be making these brachas when there is a sheet of the Rambam. So he said, Rav Aronson himself said, he always tried to find something mutter to eat. It's in grass, something that you get hanu out of, make a shahako, and have intention, shahako, niyamidvaro, everything Rabban Shalom you want us to do, including eating the treif, that's your will, that's what I'm doing. But he said, what didn't make the bracha on the specific treif itself? because maybe the halacha is like the Rambam, in order to suffik brachos v'hakel. And again, if it would have been a shayla of a one-time thing, you do make a bracha. You know, we don't hold like the Rambam. But on a constant basis, he was concerned about constantly making brachas when there is a sheet that you're not. So this is what he did. But the halacha is, if he did it, not only that, they had in one of the ghettos, I don't remember where, I don't have it here, they, what's it called, they made a special tefillah for eating chametz on Pesach. And they said, Rav Avishai, in normal times, we would have been ushered to eat chametz and had to eat matzah. Now it's pikuach nefesh. And the same Torah that you said, that's ushered to eat chametz, you said, v'nishmartem olam hashaseichem, that a person has to save his life. So we're eating this chametz, l'shem shamayim, right, in order to be able to be mekayim the mitzvah, v'nishmartem olam hashaseichem. This way people, again, if all was to give them a little bit more koach and a feeling of not yish, that it wasn't that they were being forced, you know, to go connected Ratzon Hashem and the Nazis were successful, but now this is Ratzon Hashem. And doing it with that religious way made it a tremendous difference. Okay, the next one is a little gruesome. And whoever wants to eat cookies, eat them now, because I don't think you will be interested after we've learned of this tshuva. But it's an interesting tshuva anyway. Tshuva's like this. This is also from Verenson. B'tchilas chodesh iyar tafshin hei, holichu osonu mibuchadval l'teresenstadt. Omadnu tachas hashamayim besod anir arba asur yom. Mukofi mikol tzad me'agestapo me'gendarmi ha'ashkenazis. The German police and the Gestapo surrounded them. For 14 days they were out in the field, exposed to the elements. B'chol yom k'sharov gover ba'od, and they didn't give them anything to eat. Then they were mamish starved. So yishchalnu lechol ho'asovim ha'morim ha'delim ba'agam b'mokom shamanu. They started eating the grass, just bitter grass in the swamp where they were standing. Avo gamzos ho'isha onish mavis, ki ha'ashkenazim mi'asviva ba'ov v'tzaku, ki anachnu ochlim kol ha'desha v'lo yamiru le'behemos. The Germans who lived around this area, right, who claimed after the war they didn't know what was going on, right, came and complained to the Gestapo that we're eating up the grass that's meant for their animals. Very humane people. Ulasibas harov atzimon meisum mikbechol rega kamelakam anoshim meis. Every minute people were dropping like flies. They were dying by the hundreds because of the famine. Oz ponai le'echa miyadini. And then one of my friends, he said, Reverence, and said, ask me the following shayla. Liosha etzel haragoy machronin ki margish afisas hakochos misibas harov. He said he feels like mamashi just can't go on. He's losing his kochos, and he feels like he's going to die soon because of not eating. Then, v'rak etzel achas also barayonu l'hasrichi yusam. He came up with an idea of how to save his life. V'hu, lachto chatichas basu miguf adam mei su lo'ochlo l'oshim nafshat. Cut off some meat from one of the dead corpses and eat that. The dover alibo lasos maisa could be open zen nuchal hatsul kama meos mi mavis but tu of biosa show you as a yom achron shal mechala vacheros on medis tachas koslein. This is Tavshin Hei, this is 1945. This is the end of the war. They knew that it was days till they would be saved. And if he could get this heter to eat some of the corpses, right, then may save people's lives and they may survive the war. The chaval, the people are going to die or be killed in this last minutes when they could survive the war. After going through all these years of torture, finally the light at the end of the tunnel is there, and now people are going to die the last minute. It's a terrible thing. Old Mishmasi be terem yotsumi rav shivra aleich. So Rav Aronson said, I still, you know, was I was still alive, right? And I still had my kochas. Nivalti lemishma oznai uvomana ledvarav hanemorim beemes leit tzedek. Rav Aronson was right, but it was beyond belief, right? You don't have to pass in a shy like that. Nishalti livkos, I started to cry, v'nichamti mikiros libi, ribonu shalom, v'nochamti mikiros libi, I cried out to the ribonu shalom, ribonu shalom, kachas man, let me die. V'yalti v'yeni l'madrega d'bucha zuchas hashom, don't let me stoop to this low level of becoming a cannibal. V'chashavti lo emes ki atzedek itcha, Right? Really, you're right. The Efsher, the Medina, Mutter, Umitzus, Bikuach Nefesh, Mamika. Probably Mutter. Not only that, I'll tell you something more interesting, in case you're interested. There are three shitas in eating human beings after they're dead. The Lachara, it's not so pasha because there's an issue from Noah on a human body that's being dead, which we'll get to other tshuvas. But as kashrus. It's kashrus, there's three shitas. One sheet is that a human being is awesome just like an animal is awesome. He doesn't chew his cud, doesn't have split hooves, so it's a kal v'chomer. If an animal with one simen is treif, surely an animal with two simonim is treif, and human beings are awesome. Right? You eat it, it's like eating chazer. That's one sheet. So Ramban. There's a second sheet that holds that it's not awesome, the lav. It's less chomer than eating chazer. Why? Because the Torah just said, right, lo sochlu called behema, right, can't eat animals, but a human being is not an animal. So the lav of eating an animal doesn't apply to a human being. So when the Torah said an animal has to have split hooves, right, doesn't apply to human beings. But there's an isra say, it says ezet tochlu, this you're allowed to eat, right, anything that has split hooves and whatever. But a human being is doesn't go, what's it called, is not part of that, so he's also b'essay. Less chomer than eating chazer. The difference would be if you have a human body to eat from or a chazer to eat, which would be the lesser isser. According to this, the lesser isser would be eating the human being. Third sheet that holds is no isser b'chlam in Torah of eating human beings after they die. Mitzad kashas. Because they're not an animal. So the ezet tochlu is only talking about animals, and the lav is only talking about animals. And there's no isser specifically of eating a human being, except that he's also ban law, and that could be also only with the Rabbanan. So that's a side of what it is. But in any case, but as pikuach nefesh, for sure it's mutter, even if it would be asur like chazer. If the only thing you had to eat is chazer, you could eat that too. Okay? So he says, Ahari Matsinu, Medrash Bizmana Churban, in the time of Churban by Yisrishon, the Medrashim, say that's what they did. Avoshma, that they did eat, what's it called, that the women ate their children after they died. And says that a son found a body and it turned out to be his father. Didn't know in the beginning. Avoshmano. But Reverenson said, could be right. Mikra adin it's mutter and spikuach nefesh and it was done in the past. But listen, Yoreshik Yavoli Deritzicha. I'm afraid to pass it to Shiloh that it's okay because then what's going to lead to? People are going to murder other people. Right? They're going to be so hungry and there's not going to be a corpse available. So they will make a corpse and they'll come with what's it called, they'll say that, well, the guy's almost dead, right, and they'll end up killing people who are in the last stages of dying in order to eat them. That for sure is awesome. That's murder, right? That's the same reason why, even though pikuach nefesh could be for what's it called, heart transplants or whatever, the gedolim ushered them in many cases, at least in the beginning, because the only way you can get a heart that's fit for transplant is to take it out of when it's still beating. And normally, when a person's heart's still beating, he's still alive. That means you're killing the person, the donor. So it's a sheikh. Sheim tzuharbi sheyargu lachaloshim biyosu kizil hamtim ochlam beheter. Well, that's there. If we get this heter, it becomes widespread that it's okay to eat a corpse, then people will not be able to misgather. If there are no corpses available, the strong will kill the weak to be able to eat them to survive. Also, she believes Sufik Yargisha SS Bazet, right? The Yelohem Alila, the Choda Laharo Gako, Babasla Shu Negit Sevik, the Raka Olam Okli, other Proibu Barbori, right? That, what's it called? That the SS will hear about this, that Jews are eating their cannibals. So they'll use that as an excuse for killing more of us. Because the Jews are cannibals, and we have to rid the world of these cannibals, and they'll use that as an excuse in front of the nations of the world to say, you see, they deserve it. Dvarai nichnasu la'aznav upeirish. He heard what I said and he didn't do. Ka'avar sho'achas kilu eses pikudo lo'vichonu le'terezen stop and itzal. And in a little while they got the order to take us to a different camp and we all survived. So he never had to come to that. And he says himself that what's it called, that he never had to stoop to such a level. Next, And again, I'm not 100% sure what the Shaila is, since anyways, Yisra Hanoh. I don't know what the Shaila is. That's only the Yisra Achila, it's the Basar. Yisra Hanoh is a different kind of thing. We found bodies after the Holocaust. And the Nazis took out the gold teeth, or gold bridges. Shaila is that gold Mutar Rasa. It's Rasa Banoh. Basically, anything that is connected to the body of a mace, okay, and is there not just for decoration, but it's on well, right, tied onto the body, connected to the body strongly, even if it's there, if it's, what's it called, for decoration, is also, it becomes also together with the body. And therefore, a person died with false teeth or whatever, the false teeth are also to be buried with it. Nobody else could use them. On the other hand, even clothing that you knew, or something you knew the person would have taken off had he known he was going to die, and it's only for decoration, those things could be, don't become awesome. A person had a wedding ring, you know, if they knew they were going to die, they would take the wedding ring off because they would want it to become awesome. They want to give it over to their children or whatever, then that kind of thing doesn't become awesome.
What?
Shoes is a different thing. Shoes are usher. The shoes that a person wore, even if he didn't die in them. Clothing, we'll see. Clothing, if the person died in the clothing is usher too. Clothing becomes usher too. And the clothing the person died in mamish, that's usher. Because we wouldn't say that he would want to strip himself before he died, right?
Why is it?
It's bottled to the body, and the body's also bound off.
What about a hospital gown?
What?
Hospital gown?
Hospital gown, doesn't belong to the person, so it's never bottled to him. On the other hand, clothing that was taken off the person before they died, for sure isn't awesome. That was another tshuva they had. All this clothing that the Nazis stripped people before they killed them. So all the clothing that they found afterwards, or during the war, people found other people's coats or whatever, they were allowed to take them. It was pikuach nefesh for them. But they weren't asur b'hanoah anyway, because they were taken off before the person died. Shoes is a different thing. Shoes that a person wore when he was sick and died of that sickness, those shoes are a sakana to wear, and they have to be destroyed and thrown away in a way to tear them up, but nobody would use them. Nobody could find them in the garden. But any shoes that a person wore when he wasn't sick, right, or other clothing that he wore when he was sick, even if he was sick, as long as he didn't die in that clothing, the clothing's mutter.
What about all museums?
What
about all the museums?
Museums?
Yeah, they have all these shoes.
Because they're not using them. They're, what's it called? These are shoes. First of all, they were all shoes that were taken off before the people were killed. So not also by the club. And they're not necessarily the shoes that people had a disease and died of the disease, right, and wore those shoes when they had disease. That's only for the person who had a disease and died of the disease and wore the shoes when he was, what's it called, dying. Not when he died. When he was dying. Okay. So that was that. Then there's a Shaila people had after the war. Should they remove the numbers that were tattooed onto their there's two shadows over here. One is, it's a tattoo. Secondly, it's a design to have such a thing on your. So he said, first of all, the issue of having a tattoo is making the tattoo. Leaving it there after it's made is not really the issue. No issue in that, leaving it. The issue was done. Taking it off will not take. And here they didn't do the issur; somebody else did it to them against their will. So never over the issur. There's no issur every minute of having a tattoo on that you have to take it off. And taking it off, he doesn't say this, but taking it off involves an operation that, for many people, especially people who went through the war, could be life threatening. So surely not mechuyif to put your life in danger to take off this tattoo. But his main point is that tattoo is an os kavod. They had a shayla in the Middle Ages when you had to wear this yellow star or whatever. So the gedolim of that time said you're allowed to go out with that on Shabbos because of tachshit. Because it basically says that they made it as a desire to us. But it shows we're Jews, so we believe in the Rabbanu Shlomo. So it's an Os Kovod. An Os Kovod is a Takshik. Takshik, you're allowed to go. You're allowed to go with a badge. You have to a convention badge, right? Because it's a Takshik. It's a badge of honor. So Meili said, these numbers are even a bigger badge of honor. So the Tafka, take them off, you shouldn't take them off. You should wear it as a... I had once had a balabos in my shul. He was a sailor. Herbie, you know. So he had two tattoos on his arms. Whenever he went to the mikveh, everybody would look at him like, you know, where did sailor drop into the mikveh from? Right? And he said, he came to me once, he said, I'm very, you know, embarrassed. I can't do this. So I want to go, he was about in his 50s at the time, he wanted to go into the hospital and get an operation and take these, they were big. Baruch Hashem, they had good taste, they were just anchors. It could have been worse. So he's big anchors on his arms. Right, and he said when he went to the mikveh, he said everybody, like, you know, was staring at him. I don't know if they were staring at him or not, but he felt they were staring at him. And so I told him, look, I said, you know, these are an Os Kovod for you too. Look where you were, look where you are now. Right, now you're going to a mikveh of your kippur or whatever, or stop. Right, and people see. So what are they going to think? They're not going to think that you just stop, you know, thought your boat was here or whatever, and you just lost your way. Right, they're going to say this guy is about tshuva. Right, this is what he used to be. That's an Os Kovod. So wear it proudly, right? But to go into the hospital and to be put under anesthesia and risk your life to take it off is ridiculous. So convince him. I say he died with those anchors too, but he was once a Kovod. But it, if you look at it the right way, it's not an Os Kovod. So that's what he said over here also. Nobody should take off these things. In fact, there's a Meister with the Satmar Rebbe that somebody came to him with a kvittel after the war. Look at a bracha. So Satmar Rebbe said, called over somebody from the shul over there, picked up his sleeve. He said, see these numbers? You go outside, find somebody with those numbers, give him the kvittel, and ask him for a bracha. That's the kind of person who gives you a bracha. He said, don't ask for brachas from me. You want to ask for a bracha from somebody who has a schus, give a bracha, go with somebody who has those numbers on his arm.
Tattoo has to be with ink.
That's what it is.
Those numbers like branded on?
They won't brand it on. The tattoo is a needle. And it goes into the follicles of the skin and dyes the skin. It's
a lot of those numbers are branded on. Burnt on.
Not burnt on. They weren't. They're tattooed on.
I had a neighbor burnt on.
Burnt on?
Burnt on.
Like a brand. I don't think so.
That was a whole different thing.
I don't think
is
so.
Someone
gets
a tattoo.
It's a special solution.
That was in there. It was a tattoo. There's a needle or whatever that they do with electric needles or whatever.
Well, you're not allowed to write on your hand or something like that?
No. To write, where it can come off, could be the rabbonim. To write things that look like a tattoo. That's Efer Makle. Could be just to stop and write on your hand with a pen, you know, a phone number or something that you want to do, and that could be not awesome, because that's bechlal, not davrishal kayama, it doesn't even look like a tattoo. But something that, you know, that's one of these, like, you know, tattoos that you put on, saying those could be awesome. That's a pleasure.
Halacha, someone gets a regular tattoo.
Yeah?
Someone told me it can't be buried in
Shur Shem,
is that true?
No. Because somebody did an Isser, somebody's Machal Shabbos is one thing. Somebody did an issue in his life, right? Guy spoke Russian horror once. Can't
know,
going, they can't bury anybody.
Because his body is whatever.
The last thing is, person was saved by a Goya. She saved his life. She hid him away. And after the war, he wanted to say Kaddish for her. She died. He wanted to say Kaddish. He says, Shaila, first of all, saying Kaddish for a mummer. For better goy. A mummer. A Jew was a mummer. Can you say Kaddish? So it says if he was killed in a tragic way, then that's machaper, even on a mummer. Rashi used to say that all the soldiers who were killed defending Eretz Yisrael, right, even if they were not for him at all, they have a din of tzaddikim after they're killed, because the Misa Mishun is Mechaper. The Medrash says like that. So that's what he says. Even a Jewish mummer, who normally you don't say Kaddish for, but if he's killed, right, and even if he's not killed, if he died, and it's possible that what's it called, that the Kaddish will be a kapara for him, could be you could say Kaddish for a person like that too, especially if he asked him, do you say Kaddish? You see that he had a little bit of Charata, he brings out a Misa, of a guy who was a mummer. He was what they call, he converted Moshumid, right? He converted to Christianity, but he used to give a lot of tzedakah. And he asked the people to give him tzedakah. He said, if you'll say Kaddish after I die for me, I'll give you even more tzedakah. So why are they allowed to do that? And the Maisa Psak was, yeah, they could, what's it called? They could say Kaddish for such a person. Since the Maisa Yisi had Charata a little bit, he wanted the Kaddish, he believed in it, or something. But a Goy, you're allowed to say Kaddish for. A Ger is allowed to say Kaddish for his non-Jewish parents. Right? And therefore he passed him that, what's it called? That this guy, Asakar Sato, should definitely say Kaddish for this woman. What's it called? It'll help for her neshama too. The Goyim have neshamas, and they even have a chelik in Olam Haba if they keep their sheva mitzvahs. And what's it called? And that's why there's a big union with Yad Vashem of honoring Goyim who had to save Jews' lives. There's nothing wrong with honoring a Goy. It's just the opposite. It gives the incentive other Goyim maybe to want to save Jews' lives if it's necessary. Okay, that ends the Shuvahs. And again, I think till Pesach we'll have what to do, so we're going to have to start a new topic. But if everybody could give some thoughts, I got some ideas already that people gave, but there's nothing really that I'm really excited about. So if anybody has some ideas of both Hashkafa topic and a Halacha topic. What? Kashrus. We did Kashrus not too long ago. In 25 years, we did a lot of things. 25 years is a long time ago. Yeah, I'm sure you remember. Yeah, 25 years is a long time ago. But some things we've done, you know. Think about it. Think about it, and give me in writing some ideas. I have a chance to look them over and see what to do. Yeah.
Can I ask you a couple of questions?
Finished
already.
Yeah.
First of all, I want to thank Ralph for doing such a great job.
You can even ask more questions.
The thing is that I had a list like this in the beginning, and I'm down to two little questions, which I find so difficult to accept. First of all, so many people ask, since Hashem is full of mercy, how could Hashem allow 6 million Jews, including children and babies, to be tortured, brutally murdered, gassed, burned to ashes? And considering that these tragic events that were witnessed by family members, it is humanly impossible to comprehend that everything that we happen to us is always for the good. How can this be? Consequently, high percent of survivors that witnessed these slaughters of their loved ones lost their emunah completely, because there's no way it can be so. So this is the main question. And also what's so difficult to accept that, I mean, human beings, at least Jews, have a special amuna, everything that we have is something. And for these people to see what was going on, which is totally against what we are here for, how can this be? So this is all part of my two questions.
The answer is that anybody who saw these things, went through all of this, and because of that lost their amuna, can't have questions on them. You have to have questions on the people who didn't. How could they? Mm-hmm. On the other hand, right, looking at it from without, okay, in other words, being able to see it in a more unemotional way, if that's possible, right? Not by somebody who actually went through it. There's a difference between how you relate to something that you live and you see, and something you can look at intellectually. Okay, the people who went through it or whatever, a person goes through a tsar, tsaris, or even what's it called, the anias is maver odom al midosov, maver al deosov. So it's an honest, again, you can't have times on people like that. That's for sure. Right? Live through something like that, with all the explanations in the world, it's, they're not looking at it intellectually, looking at it emotionally, and you understand them 100%. Somebody who didn't lose his emuna is something special. Somebody who did, you understand. But we're looking at it now from a totally intellectual way. Okay? We're also emotional, but we didn't live through it, Baruch Hashem. So intellectually speaking, I can tell you the answer is the following. You can't understand it, but what you can understand is how it's possible that even something like that is merciful. Example. Chofetz Chaim says that there were neshamas that were Ovdei Avodah Zarah in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, and they never got their full kapara. And those neshamas came back during the Gzeres of Tach V'Tat. Not this Holocaust, different Holocaust, in the 1600s. And they were also brutally murdered. That was the kapara those neshamas needed for eternity. They had to leave this world with brutal murder that didn't exempt the people, the Cossacks that did it because they were animals. They got Gehenna for it. But these neshamas needed that. It's like an operation. A doctor, right, who, Rachmanu Litzlan, amputates somebody's leg. Okay? He's merciful. It's mercy. Because he knows that that's what that person needs, otherwise he's going to die. Death is not the worst thing that can happen to a person because we believe there's eternity. So sometimes dying is an operation, legabe eternity. So for some reason, all these neshamas, including the children, whatever, needed to leave this world the way they did. And that was, for their neshama, the best thing. And even though the Rabbeinu Shel Olam could make a perfect world where there's no tzaras, but he made a world where we have free choice. And because of that, we can create things that we get sick. Because right? You can ask the same question on sickness. How did God let there be sickness? Let him make everybody healthy and well, and why do you need people to go through operations? But Lamaisa, because there's a world where there could be sickness, operations can be painful, but they could be merciful at the same time. This is an operation. An operation was necessary on millions of neshamas that could be, went through a lot of history, right? And they were in Gan Eden, Gehenna, wherever they were, and needed to come back into this world and leave this world in these terrible ways. But that's what exactly what that neshama needed to be able to survive and to get Gan Eden. So
the brutal way they
right, sometimes the way there's Mer says there's like 150 different ways of dying, something like that, and each one is for a different kind of need that neshama has. And sometimes the most brutal ways of dying are the biggest kapara for the neshama, and they benefit the neshama tremendously. So therefore, if we could see what will be afterwards, right, maybe a person would say, you know what, I'll go through that pain because it's worth it for eternity to have a neshama that's so clean, right? But we don't know it, we don't see it. So that somebody should lose their money because of 100%, I understand 100%, because there's a difference between what you can reason and believe and something that you actually went through, and you don't see the other part, you only see with this part. But El Semuna wise it's possible that even something so tragic should also be merciful if you add on an entire eternity, which is so much more than whatever a person could live, and factor that in. That's the only answer given.
So actually this explains also it's all for the good.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Right. But it all for the good only means if we could see the rest of the picture. We can't. Yeah. So we have to believe it. Somebody who went through this and lost their belief, we can understand 100%. We who didn't can be more intellectual about it and say, look, I don't understand it, but I can understand that it's possible that if you factor that in, that it's not going to be good.
6 million people need that kapara at once.
That's what the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, these neshamas had some kind of kesher, and it's true. Look, it's clear from all the stories we learned, anybody who was supposed to be saved was saved, and all the bad things that could have happened, this one was saved this way, it's clear that there was some hashgacha, and the people who were supposed to be killed, all the right things didn't happen to them. So there was a reason, and it doesn't mean that the people who were killed were Rishayim and the people who lived were Tzaddikim. There are a million reasons why this person didn't need that kapara. He had a different kapara, whatever it was. So there's no way of knowing from who lived and who died, who was a Tzaddik and who was a Rasha. Or if anybody was Rishayim. right? But for some reason, those neshamas, right? Those millions of neshamas were whatever neshamas that needed that kind of tikkun, and the Rebbe Shem brought them all together in that one generation and used the bad bechira of the Nazis to affect it.